It's the battle of the wrong themes here this morning. It's Friday, Brent. Sorry.
That's all right. Thank you, Dave Lewis, playing the sounds over there. News Radio KMAN, Brandon Peoples, joined by Josh Kyle, captain of the Raleigh County Police Department here. We continue our conversation. Big day coming up Monday for the RCPD. There's a new director going to be taking over, Mr. Dennis Butler, who was announced last month, was going to be taking over for Brad Schoen.
Yeah. Again, and like I said before, it's exciting times. You know, I might be dating myself a little bit, but the interesting thing about different administrations is the priorities that come with them. And I personally, in my career, go all the way back to Johnson and the administration that he had. And the thing about him was that he brought a lot of big picture stuff to the agency. He wanted to professionalize RCPD. And so he laid out him and the people with him laid out this foundation. Accreditation came on board under Johnson. But he also liked to have programs that he could highlight that were inside the police department. So, for example, I was an Explorer Scout back in the 80s, and he would send us to national conferences. We would train for those conferences, and you know, he would be able to say, I have an Explorer post that's competing at national levels. And then we also had a pistol team, those kinds of things. That was a big priority with Johnson. With the transition over to Schoen was really focused on making certain that we had initiatives that were evidence-based. Now, we've entered a new era in law enforcement where we have a lot of information about what works and what doesn't work in policing. And so Schoen took that information and really started putting a huge emphasis on, let's get involved in those programs that have been proven successful, that we know work. And that's one of the reasons why we're involved with the Boys and Girls Club. There's an official relationship between Boys and Girls Club and the Raleigh County Police Department. I know it's a shameless plug. I do it every time, but I'm very passionate about it. And the reason why is because speaking on this subject, we were heavily involved with the DARE program, and it's still very controversial in law enforcement, so I might get in trouble with some of my peers, but we had been involved with DARE for a number of years, and then some research came out and showed that it may be very good, but it doesn't do exactly what it says it's out to do. If you want to reduce the amount of drugs and violence that kids are involved with, the DARE program, at least as it was constructed at the time, doesn't do that. Now, that's part of the controversy is they've revamped and redone the way they do the program, and so that's changed. So I was asking myself the question, you know, what is it that – let's get involved with kids, and we want to see kids be successful. How can we help make that happen? And that's when I came across some information about the Boys and Girls Club. They're a national group, and there's been several studies, and one of the studies shows – that kids who are involved in Boys and Girls Club are more likely to graduate from high school. And we know that kids that graduate from high school across their life course are less likely to be involved in criminal activities. So there's that connection. Now we can be involved in a group that's local and well-founded, and we can partner together.
And it looks like we have a phone call. Good morning. You're on In Focus.
Good frosty morning to you all. Couple of questions. I've observed in the paper recently a couple of situations. One was the question about quotas, and I guess that I haven't heard a thing about that. And the next one is there's never been anything disclosed about the sudden departure of the assistant director and his spouse, both employed by your department. Another example of nepotism. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. Do you have any information on that? The Manhattan Mercury says they can't get any information about the departure, and I don't know about the quota deal either. How's that working? You have a lawsuit against that. Could you elaborate on that for the public?
Wow, a couple of good questions. Thanks. The first one referenced quotas. You mentioned a lawsuit. I'm a party in that lawsuit, so I don't think it'd be appropriate for me to make comments about that at this time. What I can say is that obviously quotas are a controversial issue. It's a difficult balance as managers that we have to make. On one hand, you want officers that are productive, and I talked about evidence-based policing earlier, and we know what's effective and what's not effective in some areas of law enforcement due to research. And so it's important. The research says this: officers are effective when they're focused and proactive. Focused and proactive. And so if you want to manage officers, you want to place them in a position where they are focused and they are proactive. And the danger you run into, though, is you've got this wall on the other end. And on the other end, that wall is called a quota system. So you have to create this environment where you've got your officers focused and proactive without creating hard rules that say you have to do so much productivity in a particular period of time. And that's always the challenge and the balance that we have to give. When it comes to the Dolings, I'll tell you a couple of things. First off, I worked with, for, and supervised at some level both of them. I respect them both greatly. I appreciate the service that they've given to the community over the last several years. I was not in charge of or had an opportunity to review the circumstances that led to their retirement, but they did choose to retire in the middle of the year, and I respect them both and wish them the best of luck. And that's basically the only information I have, especially information that I could share publicly.
All right. Thanks for the call. You know, getting back to what we were discussing before here, you mentioned getting involved with more clubs like the Boys and Girls Club. How important is that just from a perspective of getting out there in the community and showing people that you are involved here? And I guess how does that affect morale and also, you know, the perception of the police department?
So, yeah, you mentioned morale. So I'll talk about it from a personal perspective, and I'll talk about it in the context of this thing we call Operation ARC. And so when I was a police officer and I got hired, you were trained on how to write traffic tickets. You were trained on how to conduct a traffic stop and to do it safely and to write out all the information and submit it where it needs to go. And then that was it. We didn't know as young officers where accidents concentrated at, you know, unless we happened to have our own ideas based on the accident reports that we filed. We had no idea of what was likely to cause accidents. Most officers know that inattentive driving is the number one reason for accidents, but outside of that, we really didn't have a lot of information, and we didn't know what the public wanted us to do. If I was running radar and stopping cars for speeding, is that what the public wants me to do? Is that important to them? We didn't know any of these things. And with Operation ARC, we started to answer all those questions. The first thing that we did was we looked at our own internal accident data, and we found out that there was five major causes for traffic accidents. There's five major behaviors. That's first off that we found. Location wasn't that important. It's a big influence and something we need to look at, but location wasn't as big as I thought it was going to be. When we looked at the data, it was actually driving behaviors that were the most important thing that we need to focus in on. We also, through Kansas State University and Dr. Sue Williams, conducted some research. And what we discovered in speaking with community was they wanted us to focus in on traffic safety. And when they were given kind of a laundry list of behaviors, it turns out what they prioritized, the top five, were the same thing as what caused accidents. Now, the order was a little bit different, so let's talk about speeding. We know speeding is an influence in accidents in Manhattan, but it's fairly low on the list. And the further you get down on the list, the less influence it has. But the community considers speeding a major issue. And they also feel that speeding, particularly in school zones, is something that we should focus in on. Well, we fortunately don't have a lot of accidents in school zones, but all it takes is that one incident, right? So because it was so important to the community that we monitor speeding in school zones, we've placed that as a priority under what we call Operation ARC. So we've taken this idea of asking the community what's important to them, looking at our own accident data, and then asking the question, how can we conduct traffic enforcement in a way that's meaningful, that produces results, and keeps the community happy with what we're doing, essentially? And so with ARC, what we've done over the last couple of years is we essentially train officers to have talking points. And those talking points are based on this concept called procedural justice. And procedural justice says that if you ask people what's important to them and that your motives are trustworthy and you're neutral, and that... there's one more thing, by the way, and I can't remember off the top of my head, but I'll think of it as soon as we're done. But if you do these things, you follow these elements of procedural justice, it's much more likely that the public will accept what you're doing, the decisions that you make, for example, whether or not to write a ticket or issue a warning, those kinds of things. And we then did a follow-up survey, Kansas State University did, and we found out there was a significant difference. When we communicated to the public at these traffic stops that we're trying to reduce accidents, that we treat everybody the same, that this violation is known to cause accidents and we're having a concentration at a certain location, people are much more likely to accept that and feel positive about the interaction.
Okay. Well, and as far as you kind of mentioned what Brad Schoen brought to the table, what are you expecting here with the new director, Dennis Butler?
Well, I knew you were going to ask that. We know a couple of things, but there's a lot that we don't know. We've heard very good things about Dennis Butler. We're really excited. We do know that he comes from an accredited agency. So that's important to us, so that's good to know. We do know that he's involved in the International Association of Chiefs of Police. Again, that's a big deal. It's a highly, very, very influential organization, and he's got a significant part in that. We know that he comes from a larger city on the East Coast. He retired as a captain, so he's got experience in a metropolitan area. I think it was the D.C. area. And then we know that he's been chief for a long time over in Ottawa. So he's not the kind of – which is a smaller community. So he's got big-town experience, small-town experience, and he's also somebody who spent a lot of years with every organization that he's been a part of, which is also very positive. This isn't somebody that's likely to come in, spend a couple of years, 18 months or so, and then move on to something else. We've got him, and we're happy. It's going to be a good thing.
All right. Yeah, no – there's a lot of excitement around his hire last month. And by the way, he'll be sworn in 10 a.m. on Monday. That'll take place at the courthouse with Judge Merle Wilson, I believe, is doing the ceremony. So that's great. You mentioned the Boys and Girls Club. You're heavily involved with that. Is there anything you guys want, while you're here, you want to go ahead and maybe promote?
Yeah. There's a number of ways to support the Boys and Girls Club. Again, I mentioned the reason why RCPD's officially supported the Boys and Girls Club and why we've been involved. And I think, obviously there's volunteering. A lot of people think of Boys and Girls Club, it's an after-school program, and they think, well, that's basically all it is. But they use one of the reasons why they've been so successful is they used evidence-based programs to make certain that they have an influence over the kids. And there's study times and there's citizenship times, there's reading activities. So it extends the learning day is what it does. And I think that's one of the reasons why it keeps kids out of trouble that are at risk. There's a place to go. There's a lot of kids that say, if it wasn't for Boys and Girls Club, I'd have just been out getting in a lot of trouble. But there was a Boys and Girls Club down the street. That's where I went after school, and I basically stayed out of trouble, and it extended the learning day, so I got through school. That's really what it boils down to. There's a number of ways that you can support the Boys and Girls Club. They have the same thing they deal with that we deal with at the police department. 88% to 89% of our budget is personnel. And so those costs are very fixed, and Boys and Girls Club is in the same position. They're in that position because if you want to deliver evidence-based programs, you have to have the people that are qualified to do it, so you've got to pay salaries to staff, and that consumes a lot of your budget, and it's inflexible if you want to keep moving these programs forward. So there's a number of ways to support. Obviously, they accept donations, many different types of donations. They have several events throughout the year. The one that comes to mind is Casino Nights coming up. That's a fundraiser for Boys and Girls Club. We did Duck Dash over this year, and that was a lot of fun. I took my kids there, and we had a blast. So there's different events that they have that fundraise, and then also volunteering. You can volunteer with Boys and Girls Club, and in fact, a lot of the way they offset costs is through volunteers as much as possible.
Excellent. Well, anything else before we let you go?
Well, I think we have one little stringer. You asked me a tough question and about Dennis Butler and what I thought was coming.
Okay.
And we're out.
No, you're okay.
That was me.
Oh, okay.
That was me.
Pushed the wrong button.
I'm sorry.
I thought maybe you got a call from Butler that said, cut this guy off.
No, that one wasn't from Butler. That was from Sean.
Oh, I see. He's talking too much about Butler. Not me. Okay. But one hint is I think he's going to be very strategic in his thinking. He sat down with all the commanders, and we've had a solid time talking about major elements of the RCPD or in our sections we're involved with, and you can just see as you're speaking with him, he's a thinker, and it appears he's going to take his time before making major decisions, which is another good thing. Sometimes a chief comes in and it's their prerogative, but a chief will come in and just make grand sweeping changes very rapidly, and it doesn't appear Butler's going to do that. He's going to take his time, he's going to learn the agency and the community, and then he's going to start making some decisions for changes.
Okay. Well, we'll be interested in talking with him further. I imagine we'll get a chance to speak with him next month. So thank you for coming out today, Captain Kyle, and have a good New Year's.
Sure. You as well. Happy holidays.
All right. We'll be back on In Focus after these words on News Radio KMAN.
KMAN Morning News brought to you by Manhattan Appliance and Sleep Source, your appliance specialist located in the West Loop Shopping Center.
If you have hard water, the Limescale not only leaves white spots, it clogs pipes and breaks down appliances, costing you hundreds of dollars in energy and wear. Eliminate Limescale and other water issues like brown staining, bad odors, and lead with HydroCare Water.